Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I'm Justin Asiri, and each week I interview military veterans about their civilian career. Today's episode number 110 with the co-founder of Plaided, Nick Taranto.
So we launched Plaided on the worst day of internet traffic in the history of the internet in the Northeast. And to add, you know, insult to injury, that 10,000-pound cargo container that we had sitting in a parking lot on the East River in Brooklyn got picked up in the storm surge from Sandy and got sucked out into the river. And the only thing that kept our entire business from getting flooded out of business before we were even in business was that thumb-width yellow 220-volt electricity cord that got tangled up around a phone pole and kept the whole box from getting sucked out to sea.
Well, folks, you are in for a doozy of an interview today. Nick is an awesome guy. He actually joined the Marine Corps later than most, at age 26, out of Harvard Business School. But he's got a great, incredible story of how he grew Plaided, a company that's raised over $50 million in funding. They have been featured on Shark Tank. It is an incredible company, but he talks about the slog of starting a company and how that first year they were fighting to be noticed, and 2 years later they were still fighting with so little validation. He talks about how the day that they launched their company, there was Hurricane Sandy in New York that literally flooded the container they were working out of, and it was only an extension cord wrapped around a telephone pole that kept it from being swept out to sea. This is a great episode for any of you thinking of starting your own company, or any of you who are just thinking of how to be the best you can wherever you're at right now. Nick is very candid in the ups and downs of his own personal journey, and I think you'll find it inspiring just like I did. For listeners at beyondtheuniform.io/books, there's a special offer for Beyond the Uniform listeners where you get a free audiobook of your choice with audible.com. One book that Nick recommends that I recommend as well is The Hard Thing About Hard Things. I did this book on audiobook. You can get that for free, and Beyond the Uniform gets a little bit of money to help offset the cost of the show. As always, there's show notes at beyondtheuniform.io where you can find out more. And with that, let's dive in to my conversation with Nick. Joining me today in New York is Nick Taranto. Nick, welcome to Beyond the Uniform.
Hey, Justin. Thanks for having me. Good to be here.
So for listeners, I wanted to give a quick background on Nick. He is the co-founder and CEO of Plaided, which is a company whose mission is to help people eat better and live better. I'm betting money that many listeners have used Plaided and have maybe cooked off a healthy and quick meal as a result. Plaided has raised over $55 million in funding, and they have been featured in the Wall Street Journal, Forbes, New York Times, Wired Magazine, and many more. Nick started out at Dartmouth College, after which he worked at Compip Microfinance before going on to Harvard Business School. After HBS, he graduated from the Marine Corps' The Basic School, where he drilled as an active reservist for 3 years. He also worked at Goldman Sachs as a private wealth advisor prior to starting Plaided. So Nick, maybe to start off, anything to add to or amend to that intro?
There's a lot bundled in there. We could take this a lot of directions, but what I'd say is my career has definitely been non-traditional. And I get a lot of pleasure and joy in mentoring folks who are, you know, in their early 20s, mid-20s, or looking to make a career transition, who might not have a traditional background, traditional background being straight out of college, 2 years at a consulting shop, or 4 years active duty and then business school. And rather I've kind of put pieces together along the way where it makes sense in retrospect. But it's always been an adventure, and I've gotten to a place where I'm pretty stoked about how all the pieces of the puzzle have come together. But I definitely wanted to make sure listeners are clued into the fact that I did not have a big picture plan when I was certainly 21 or even when I was getting off active duty about how entrepreneurship would fit into my life and what this journey would look like exactly. So, you know, I think we can explore a lot of different angles here, but you know, that idea of living in beta, so to speak, or figuring things out iteratively and testing hypotheses both for your business and for yourself and your life and your career as quickly as possible has been, you know, kind of my guiding ethos.
That's awesome. Well, maybe to start off, you know, you have a different background than most of the guests I have on the show. And I'm curious, you joined the military later than most. What led you to join the Marine Corps and what was that experience like?
Yeah, I was 26 years old when I commissioned into the Marine Corps. I'd gone through officer candidate school and I was looking at either going into consulting, which is what most of my peers were doing coming out of business school, or accepting my commission and becoming an officer of Marines. And I thought long and hard about that decision a few months out from graduating from business school. And it was a bit of a wild thought process because, you know, no one coming out of Harvard Business School had gone active duty in the Marine Corps since World War II. So when I asked most of my friends or mentors or advisors or, you know, anyone who would listen and offer advice what they thought, they said, yeah, you're kind of crazy to even contemplate doing this. Why would you, you know, I had one person even say, why would you throw your life away and do that? And you know, none of that feedback made sense to me. And it wasn't until I talked to David Gergen, who's a professor at the Kennedy School, where I also went to grad school. He's also a political commentator on CNN, so you may know his face and name from there. And he served in four different White Houses, both Republican and Democrat. But probably most importantly, he went to law school and then commissioned in the Navy only after going to law school. And when I asked him his opinion, he said, you should go do it. You'll never regret it. And that's definitely the way I feel about it. You know, I was older than almost everyone in my platoon in my company, except for some prior enlisted guys who were and gals who were coming through. But I saw it as a now or never proposition. And I knew that I would regret it if I didn't spend time, you know, kind of answering the call to serve in uniform.
And, you know, I'm wondering, when, you know, as you look back on your time in the Marines, what did you learn there that has been most helpful in entrepreneurship?
I think so. I went on and specialized as an infantry officer. I went through infantry officer course with the Marines before going reserve side and serving with a few different companies all over the East Coast. I think particularly in my infantry training in the early days of getting the business up and off the ground was incredibly relevant and useful. I mean, you know, operating in under ambiguity, needing to persevere through some really tough stuff, both emotionally, psychologically, sometimes even physically. You know, we had a ton of challenges, which we can talk through if interesting. Getting the business up and off the ground first, 12 months of the business's life. And just, you know, putting one foot in front of the other, knowing that we had a big mission ahead of us, and that we had to just go execute it. I think those are all tenets and good takeaways from the Marine Corps, and particularly from the infantry. You know, probably most important though is the fact that when you're growing an organization, it's incredibly important to make the mission crystal clear and phrase it in a way that everyone can understand it, can repeat it, and really internalize it and get what the big picture is. so that, you know, when you look to your left and right, the day-to-day might be a grind, it might be a slog, but you know that you're getting up and out of bed every day working on something bigger than yourself. So that's definitely a huge takeaway I took from my time in the Marines and tried to apply that in building our business here.
Is there any counterexamples of things that you learned in the Marines that you had to leave behind as you pursued entrepreneurship and just wasn't as helpful to you in starting a company?
Justin, that's a great question. I've thought about that a lot, actually. I think particularly when you don't have a military background, it's easy to romanticize, you know, what goes on in the military, especially the Marines. And I think the Marines probably have the best brand of anyone in all of the United States, which is saying something. You know, I don't think they've missed their recruiting quota in a long, long time. And a big part of that is because the brand is incredibly strong. But there are definitely aspects of martial life that do not extend into the world of entrepreneurship and starting your own business. Probably the biggest one is dealing with bureaucracy, right? So much of military time is hurry up and wait, and waiting for the word, and waiting for the mission or the command from higher to come down. And in this world, especially in the early days when it's just you or you and a couple other people, it's all on you to figure out what the next plan is, you know, where the opportunities are, where the risks are, make those assessments, prioritize, you know, the entire world that's in front of you and develop an action plan. So, you know, I tend to what I've learned about myself over the last, you know, decade is that I tend to do best when there is no structure, where, you know, it really is incumbent on me to develop, to hold myself accountable and develop a plan. You know, I do less well when I just get delivered a plan and have to go execute it. So I was pretty happy to leave behind the bureaucracy and, you know, what I would call the limited ability to move laterally and to think more creatively and operate more independently, that you tend to see in any big bureaucracy or hierarchical organization, but especially, you know, from my experience in the military.
And I want to get into the experience of starting Plated, but is there anything you'd want listeners to know about the time between the Marine Corps and starting Plated that, you know, played a role in your journey?
You know, coming off active duty, I didn't really know what I wanted to do with my life. You know, I had some fancy degrees. I spent time active duty with the Marine Corps, but I was a little lost, to be honest. I was now in my late 20s. I had a fiance at the time, and she'd been working, you know, quote unquote, real jobs for the better part of a decade, and I hadn't yet had my first, you know, real job outside of the military, and It was a pretty stressful period in my life, because I wasn't sure who I was supposed to be or what I was supposed to do. And the idea of working, you know, 9 to 5 or, you know, even worse, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. in some job that I didn't really care that much about, you know, really, really depressed me pretty fundamentally. And when I got off active duty, I went to Wall Street. Only for about 6 months, but that just really reinforced to me how different life paths could be. And I saw my bosses on the desk on Wall Street, who, you know, by all measures were, you know, successful. They were making a ton of money. They had families. They were running books of business, but many of them seem, fundamentally to be lacking something, whether it be happiness or a bigger mission, something bigger than themselves. And I knew that I didn't want to, put my head down, grind it out on Wall Street and put up the Periscope 10 years down the road and wake up middle-aged with a mortgage and a couple kids and a career that I wasn't satisfied with, kind of beholden to a very large paycheck. So that's when I really started to look around and understand that this world of entrepreneurship existed. This is 2011 now, so taking you back a bit, and the what I would call the fad for entrepreneurship hadn't really taken off to the same extent that it has today quite yet. So there really weren't as many resources or as many folks, especially in New York, who I could go and talk to and say, what was your path to building a very successful multi-$100 million business? How did you do that? But I was able to team up with the business school friend of mine who was back in New York as well. And he was a true entrepreneur. He had built a data storage company straight out of college. His name is Josh Hicks. He's now my co-founder at Plated. And we did this founder dating thing for 2 or 3 months, where we tried each other on for size, figured out if we wanted to work together. We'd actually done some service work, some volunteer work together in Haiti after the earthquake down there. So we lived on plywood beds under bug nets for a couple weeks. So we've been through some tough stuff together. But working on an idea, figuring out if we wanted to start a business together was our next step. So I approached him initially as a mentor of sorts, and over the course of the next couple of months, we figured out that we wanted to work together and start a business together.
Do you have any advice for veterans who are thinking of partnering with someone? Like how you vetted that, how you did that founder dating, and any tips on how to tease out whether or not people would work well together in that extreme condition in the trenches of those early days of a startup?
Yeah, I mean, there is so much that can and will go wrong when you're starting a business. It's like developing a battle plan, right? You can put your business plan together, and every business plan looks great until it makes first contact with the enemy, or in the case of a business, with the customer. So, it's really, really important to, first ask yourself the question: Do you want a co-founder? Are you up for the psychological burden and challenge of starting something on your own? Starting anything on your own is incredibly tough. Takes a lot of resolve and just psychological, mental toughness to ride the ups and downs. So probably the first and maybe most important question you'll ask yourself over the course of business is, do you want a co-founder? And there's probably some good soul searching required to come up with an answer to that. The next question, if the answer to that is yes, you want a co-founder, that's going to be the most dilutive equity hit you take, regardless of how much investment dollars you take on in subsequent years, because you're essentially, if you split the company evenly up front, you're giving half the company away to your co-founder before the company even exists. So it's a big question. But the way I've always thought about equity, whether that be with co-founders or employees or with investors, is you're going to take a dilutive hit. You're going to reduce your total stake in the enterprise, but I've always thought it's worth it to take that hit as long as you are increasing your probability of success by an equal or greater ratio. So, by taking on a co-founder, you're giving up 50% of your control in the business, but are you increasing your probability of success by more than 50%? And to me, the answer was very clearly yes. So, finding a co-founder, okay, I needed a co-founder. I wanted to build a business with someone else, you know, lock arms and kind of go into battle together. The next question was, you know, who and you know, what kind of skill set? And I think it's a really important question, because human nature is to, you know, befriend people and work with people who are similar to us, who you have similar hobbies and talk the same way and think the same way. And that can be really counterproductive. It can actually hurt your probability of success, especially in the early days. So for me, finding someone who had a very complementary set of skills was really important. And, you know, that started with kind of diagnosing myself, or, you know, looking at myself and saying, where am I strong? Where am I weak? You know, where do I want to focus? Where do I want to spend my time? And where do I want to complement my weaknesses and my strengths? So, you know, doing that self-examination is really, really crucial. And, you know, for me, I knew I didn't want to be the one doing the coding. I didn't want to build the website. I didn't want to be doing the financial modeling. I wanted to be out selling. I wanted to be out hustling. I wanted to be, you know, developing the mission and the vision and proselytizing that and hiring employees and out generating business. So I, you know, I needed and wanted someone who was more comfortable doing the other side of the business, which was more the behind the scenes, you know, making sure that the website worked, making sure that we had the right spreadsheets and tables set up for our inventory and our warehouse management systems when we got to that point. So I think, you know, it's super, super critical in the early days of starting a business, if you're going to go with a co-founder, to really understand where you're strong, where you're weak, and find a co-founder or co-founders who complement you, even though that might be uncomfortable, because you're going to be mixing it up with people who might be very different from you.
And what was the genesis of Plated? Do you remember like a single moment where you had this idea, or where did the idea come from?
Yeah, so, you know, Josh and I had been working on a totally different idea, and it wasn't working. It was going nowhere fast. And I remember we were working out of a friend's office on the Upper East Side of Manhattan. And we went for a walk around the reservoir in Central Park, about a mile or so around. And we would just do laps and laps around this reservoir, talking and you know, bouncing ideas off each other, and came to this realization going on one of these walks around the reservoir that this first idea we had just wasn't going to work. But we decided and knew that we wanted to work with each other. We'd been through a couple months of, you know, pretty intense work already, and we hadn't killed each other yet. And we liked working with one another. So the question was then what comes next? And we had been thinking through this meal kit concept for some time. And on that walk around the reservoir, this was in, you know, late May of 2012, we kind of, at the end of a couple miles of walking, we turned to each other and said, all right, you know, this is what we need to do. This is what the next attempt at building a business is going to be. And, you know, that was driven through two main factors. You know, one is just the food industry more broadly, and I'll talk to that in a second. And the second is driven out of personal need, our own experience with food. So on the food industry side, you know, we'd gone to business school together and had done hundreds of case studies while we were in business school, analyzing and tearing apart different businesses. But we'd only done one case remotely related to the food industry, and that was on a cranberry juice manufacturing company, and it was an operations case. So out of hundreds and hundreds of cases, we'd only touched on food very, very briefly. So we didn't really understand the size of the food market, you know, what food businesses looked like, how they operated, where the weaknesses were, where the opportunities were. And as we started to explore that some more, we came to realize that, you know, one, food is just absolutely enormous. There's really no other industry like it. You know, healthcare is bigger as an industry, but it's incredibly regulated. And while food is regulated, it's not nearly as tough to build a business and operate as it is in healthcare. And two, as we looked across the landscape at different types of food businesses, we came to this realization that no one had built a very large business using food business using data and technology. You know, there had been some spectacular failures in Web 1.0 in the late 1990s and early 2000s. You know, most significantly Webvan, which was one of the first e-commerce companies, and it was basically an online grocer. And they had raised almost $1 billion from all the biggest names in venture capital and Wall Street. And it was now used as a case study of just spectacular failure, where they basically incinerated all that cash in a couple of years and had nothing to show for it. So, you know, fast forward from Webvan's failure to 2012, and, you know, there really hadn't been major data and technology-driven innovation in a long, long time. And, you know, it didn't make sense to us why that was the case. And we thought we could do something. So then the other realization for us was that, you know, we were both athletes. I'm an Ironman triathlete, and Josh was a competitive swimmer. And it was just ridiculously hard, complex, and expensive to get good food into our tummies. It took an enormous amount of brain capacity to just figure out where and how and what to eat. And especially when it came to cooking. You know, we realized early on that, you know, the more you can cook, the happier you'll be, the more control you'll have over what you're eating, the more transparency there will be into where the food is coming from that you're putting into your body. And that all mattered to us in a big, big way. And there was just no good way to make cooking work for us, especially living in Manhattan, where you go to the grocery store after work and the line sometimes could take an hour to get through, which is pretty intolerable. And then also, you know, working on Wall Street, I was only there 6 months, but I put on over 20 pounds in 6 months coming off active duty, just you're sitting at the desk from 7:30 a.m. to 7 p.m. or later, and felt like crap. You know, it was really the first time in a long time that I felt like I'd lost control over both what I was eating and what was going on in my life. So, you know, Josh and I look at those two trends of food just being an enormous trillion-dollar market with not a lot of data and technology innovation, and the other trend of, you know, people wanting to eat better, people wanting to know where their food is coming from, but there just being a huge amount of complexity in making good food happen. And we thought that we could build a better food business by using data and technology at the backbone, at the core DNA of what we were setting out to build.
And I want to dive into your experience, but maybe just to set the stage for someone on active duty who might not be familiar with Plated, how would you describe Plated and what you do as a company?
So we deliver everything you need to cook a chef-designed meal at home in about 30 minutes. So we deliver all the protein, all the meat, all the spices, all of your rice or quinoa, all your kale or basil, plus a chef-designed recipe card with an image of the final meal and some really easy-to-follow steps that pretty much anyone can follow to get a fantastic meal on the table in about 30 minutes. You know, our company vision is to create a world where healthy, affordable, and delicious food is available for everyone, And we wanted to start with cooking as the first step to achieving that vision and accomplishing that mission. So you know, as a consumer, you come to the website or go to our app, Plated. We've got over 15 different options available every week that you can choose from. The menu changes each week. We'll make suggestions to you based on your taste profile, what you tell us you like or don't like, and then you click what you want, and we deliver that directly to your door so that you can cook a fantastic meal. And it's pretty straightforward. It's at a 50,000 foot level, it's not a crazy hard concept to wrap your head around. The same way, you know, AI or machine learning or big data might be, although we leverage all of those things in building our business. But we use those tools to make the customer experience around getting food and cooking it as awesome as possible.
What has been one of the most challenging moments since starting Plated? I can only imagine the, you know, I've seen from an external standpoint all of the highs and all of the incredible things you've accomplished. But what were some of the more challenging times where I'm not sure if you thought of giving up or you didn't know which way to go, or what were those lower points?
I mean, we had a ton of them. We had a really tough time getting this business up and off the ground. You know, 5 years on, I think it's easy to tell a success story, or at least from the outside to look in and see that. But you know, the first year, we ran into obstacles and you know, literal floods at every turn. You know, first and foremost, Josh and I had been working on other ideas for about 6 months before incorporating and starting Plated on June 7th of 2012. So we had burned through our personal savings. We had liquidated our IRAs and 401ks, and we were basically out of money. It was basically, you know, go and raise money from other people or go find jobs. And neither Josh or I was really in the mood for looking to find a job. We really wanted to pursue this idea, which meant that we had to go out and raise money from outside investors effectively on day zero of starting the business. And, you know, neither of us had ever done anything before in food or e-commerce or building a consumer brand. So you can imagine we'd you know, find people to pitch for our investment, for our fledgling company. And, you know, we'd give them this pitch about building an e-commerce brand for food, and they'd say, well, you guys have never done anything e-commerce, anything in food, or anything remotely involving a brand. So, you know, why the hell should we, you know, put money into you? And we just had conversation after conversation after conversation where we, you know, quite literally had doors slammed in our face. We talked to over 200 people between June, July, and August of 2012. And the only yes we got was from my dad, who is, you know, by no means, you know, wealthy. I grew up in a very privileged household, but you know, and education was always first and foremost. But you know, he was not in a position to, you know, fund the business. So he gave us enough money to pay for ramen and my apartment rent for a couple months. But you know, that was a far cry from what we needed to get the business up and off the ground. So incredibly demoralizing and humbling and challenging early days as we tried to convince people that we were going to accomplish this thing in the world, but just got rejected every which way we went. You know, eventually we were able to cobble together some funds. I met this group of angel investors, so people who fund very, very early stage businesses. And they were former Israeli Defense Forces commandos, so some really tough, awesome guys that had moved from Israel to Silicon Valley after their service. And this group of guys had built two very, very successful businesses that had sold them for hundreds of millions of dollars and were now looking to fund new entrepreneurs like us. And they liked the Marine Corps story. They liked our hunger and our passion. And we raised our first money from those guys, from those angels based in Silicon Valley. They took a big chunk of the business in exchange for the cash that they put in. Again, another big dilutive hit in the early days, but we didn't really have an option. It was either stop pursuing this dream or take a hit to our equity and keep going. We decided to do the latter. So we had a little bit of money, but didn't get easier from there. I'm putting out a book. I don't know if I told you this, Justin. I'm publishing a book coming out later this year or early next year, and I tell some more stories in there. The book is going to be called The Evolved Eater: A Quest to Eat Better, Live Better, and Change the World. So one story I share in there, which I'll tell here, is about how now we had a little bit of money, enough to at least take a run at the business. And up to that point, we were just working off of my couch in my apartment on West 14th Street in Manhattan. And, Josh was working on the website. I was going to the local grocery store, buying chicken by the pound and bags of basil, and we'd bring it back and I'd hack it up on the kitchen counter and we'd pack it and hand deliver around Manhattan, really scrappy, really hustling in the early days. But we realized very early on that we needed a professional operation, a professional fulfillment center, if we were ever going to grow this business. So we looked all over New York City, all the boroughs. We scoured for a refrigerated space where we could work. We couldn't find anything. So eventually, we found this thing called a C-box, basically a refrigerated cargo container that they use for shipping bulk refrigerated and frozen goods across the oceans. And we rented one of these things and parked it in Brooklyn outside of a space that we rented on a month-to-month basis, just trying to scrimp and scrap every way possible. And this 10,000 pound, 40 foot long cargo container, we plugged into an electricity outlet with a yellow 220 volt cord about the size of my thumb, about the width of my thumb. And that's where we started taking our inventory and ran all of our operations from there in Greenpoint, Brooklyn, right on the East River. So, beautiful view over Manhattan when the sun was setting. We were right on the water. And that was all fine and good until Hurricane Sandy hit. That was October of 2012. So October 29th, 2012. I'll never forget the day because that was also the day that we officially launched as Plated. So it was Hurricane Sandy came down like a beast on New York City. For those who weren't on the East Coast when Sandy hit, it was really something to behold. I mean, the city shut down for days. Just no electricity, people fleeing the city, elevators not working, traffic lights not working. It was like something out of a apocalypse movie. And that was the day we launched Plated. We launched Plated on the worst day of internet traffic in the history of the internet in the Northeast. And to add, insult to injury, that 10,000 pound cargo container that we had sitting in a parking lot on the East River in Brooklyn got picked up in the storm surge from Sandy and got sucked out into the river. And the only thing that kept our entire business from getting flooded out of business before we were even in business was that thumb width yellow 220 volt electricity cord that got tangled up around a phone pole and kept the whole box from getting sucked out to sea. So, you know, a couple illustrative examples there, Justin, around how hard it was to make this business work and the kind of challenges we faced in the early days. You know, we've never been easy for us, but it's just been a game of perseverance and hustling.
I love that, man. I just appreciate your candor. I think it's so easy to whitewash over these moments of just, I can't even imagine the amount of doubt I would have and insecurity. And it would just feel like the whole universe is conspiring against me, sending this horrific event
totally.
The day we launch, and then to persevere beyond that. Is there a particular moment where you remember things shifting or where you knew this was going to be something big?
Yeah. I mean, yes. Yeah. I mean, it took a year of just grinding it out, and then we started getting a little bit of press, a little bit of coverage, all just from hustle, just from reaching out to reporters directly, emailing them, you know, telling them the story, asking them out for coffee. We started getting some early coverage, and that early coverage led to the folks from Shark Tank reaching out to us. So, you know, we didn't apply. They reached out to us, the producer, and said, hey, you know, we love your story. We think you'd be a great fit for the show, for Shark Tank. You know, put together an application. They helped us do that. And they flew us out to LA, in July of 2013. So a year after we, you know, officially incorporated, we were out in LA at the Sony lot, filming for Shark Tank. And, you know, we did the filming, we thought it went well, but then, you know, 1 month went by, we didn't hear anything. 2 months went by, we didn't hear anything. Three, four, five, six, seven, 8 months go by and we don't hear anything about when our episode is going to air. And now we're starting to, you know, get nervous because, the whole idea was to, yes, raise a little bit of money by going on the show, but also, you know, get the publicity for the business that you get by getting in front of 10 million households at prime time on a Friday night. And, you know, 8 months after filming, we still didn't hear anything from the producers. So we were like, oh man, this isn't going to show. And, to make a long story short, we ended up getting a call and, producers gave us a week of heads up notice that the show was going to air. So now we're almost 2 years into the business and we're still, you know, still not seeing any breakaway velocity, you know, like couple hundred orders a week, just grinding it out. But then that Shark Tank episode aired and it was really an inflection point for the business. We had sprinted to get a nationwide network up in place, you know, hypothesizing that the Shark Tank episode would air. And we wanted to take advantage of that nationwide media. So we were ready to fulfill orders across the country. And when that Shark Tank hit, I mean, we saw a 1,000-time increase in traffic to our website. You know, we're tech guys, and even with all the planning, the site still crashed. And there's just a phenomenal outcome. We saw more revenue the month following that Shark Tank airing than we had seen cumulatively the entire history of the business leading up to that point. And that you know, coverage and the demand that generated really validated for us the idea that, you know, holy smokes, this is not just an idea that works in Manhattan or San Francisco or Chicago. This is something that appeals to folks all over the country, you know, in every zip code. And, you know, that gave us the confidence to go out and raise our first, you know, our first, what I call real, you know, real money, our Series A round of investment, which was $15 million. And also validated for us that we could then go build TV advertising and start investing to really grow the business faster. So, you know, that it wasn't until almost 2 years into the business that we had that validation point that, you know, this was something that was going to take off.
I know we're short on time here. I think that, you know, the stories you're providing are incredible. I know they're energizing and inspiring for me. I know they will be for our listeners too. I'm curious if you have any specific advice. If someone's listening, they're on active duty right now, they aspire to start their own company one day. Do you have any advice for them about how to do that, or just advice to remember along the way?
Yeah, I mean, this might be... you know, hypocritical advice, or maybe not, but, you know, what I would say is that it's a really hard transition, going from that military lifestyle to straight into an entrepreneurial lifestyle. You know, going from having, you know, prescribed routine, you know, everything from what you're going to wear to what you're going to eat to what you're going to do that day, to just having complete and total freedom over everything you do. It can be completely overwhelming. So, you know, the advice that I tend to give folks who are making that transition is, if at all possible, you know, go try and work at a, if you want to be an entrepreneur, go try and spend some time, it might be 3 months, might be a year, might be a couple of years, working at another startup. You know, go and see how startups either succeed or fail, and try and learn on someone else's dollar for a little bit of time before striking out on your own and trying to hustle to make it happen. You know, there's no substitute for the experience of going out and building your own thing if that's what you want to do. But at the same time, there is so much to learn, and it is so incredibly hard that you want to give yourself as many advantages as possible. And if you can find a team or someone who's willing to give you a shot like I said, anywhere from a couple months to a couple years, where you just learn how young businesses operate, you know, what cash flow looks like, what a profit and loss statement looks like, you know, what building out a team means, what hiring and firing means in the private sector. Getting those skills and getting those experiences will be invaluable when and if you decide to go and make a run at it on your own.
That's great. And that leads into my other question is just, is there any resources, you know, that could be books or podcasts, classes, seminars, anything that you found really helpful in your own entrepreneurial journey that you would recommend to listeners?
There's a great book that came out a couple of years ago by Ben Horowitz, who is one of the named partners at the venture capital firm in Andreessen Horowitz. And the book is called The Hard Thing About Hard Things. And you know, before becoming a venture capitalist, Ben Horowitz was an entrepreneur himself, and he started a couple businesses. And he just talks through his experience, you know, starting and scaling businesses and his takeaways for aspiring entrepreneurs. So The Hard Thing About Hard Things by Ben Horowitz is a great book. You know, a resource that I go back to time and again is entrepreneur.com. You got to sift through some of the noise on the site, but there are a lot of good articles written by both journalists and first person accounts of different aspects of building a business, everything from raising money to hiring, to firing, to building out a sales team, to operations and different contracts and types of negotiations. So, you know, entrepreneur.com is free, and it's a really good resource if you're interested in pursuing this career and lifestyle.
This is great. Well, I always like to end with an open-ended question, which is, you know, I've asked you a lot of questions and you've shared so much with the community. I'm just curious if there's any final words of wisdom or knowing that you've got a group of active duty and recently transitioned veterans listening, anything else you'd want them to know?
Yeah, I think, you know, whether you go and build a business on your own or you go and join a team in a company that's already operating, there's such a hunger out there for vets, you know, especially, you know, post 9/11 veterans. everyone, and I mean everyone, is looking to hire, vets, both for you know, what they know they can bring to the table, and because it's just a great story to tell to all stakeholders. So, you know, there can be some challenges in translating what it means to be a machine gunner into, the practical side of how you can help, build a business and run a business. But, don't give up if at first it's a challenge, because people out there want you and they need you. And you got, by being a veteran, you are almost automatically a valuable resource to any enterprise.
This is great, Nick. Well, I appreciate your advice. I appreciate your example. For listeners, at beyondtheuniform.io, you'll find show notes with everything we discuss. You can find Nick at plated.com. Also, keep an eye out for his book, The Evolved Eater, A Quest to Eat Better, Live Better, and Change the World. That'll be out in the next 6 months or so, right, Nick? Is that about right? Next year, maybe.
Yep. Sometime later this year or early next.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Nick. I appreciate it.
Surface, surface, surface.
All right, folks. Thanks for listening. If you haven't taken advantage of our audible.com free audiobook of your choice offer, check it out at beyondtheuniform.io/books. Check out The Hard Thing About Hard Things, which Nick recommended. I recommended that as well. Incredible story by Ben Horowitz. If you haven't yet left us a review on iTunes, I'd greatly appreciate it, or any way you know of to let more veterans know about this as a great free resource to help them figure out what to do and how to be successful in their civilian career. With that, have a great rest of the week, and I look forward to sharing another interview with you next week.